Okay, so I've got 3 lattes, 1 espresso, and matcha, and then a wheatgrass. Is the wheatgrass for the llama? It's for the llama, right? Okay, got it.
You know, I think about the joy that my students had when they were assigned the drunken 5-year-old as their character, right? Or yeah. some of these unscrupulous wedding guests trying to bilk the family, and then to bring the climate change on top of that is basically the way yeah. we played it was, you know, there was it ran over however many days, 5 or 7 days, or 8 beats. That's right. And as you got towards the 8-beat, and Rob had scripted all these wonderful moments, like the cold feet moment, and you know, the disaster that happens at the wedding rehearsal and things like that. And then to see the way this, you know, then we usually just ramped up the climate events, right? So the one in New Delhi, the monsoon hits by the end of it, and then the one in Key Biscayne, and I think also the one in Argentina. One of the two, the hurricane hits at the end, or there's a flooding event that happens, and then the wedding guests are all trying to deal with that. And so whether they're playing a prepper who's got their own sub and they can handle it, or if they're playing someone who's going to have to learn to share a raft with somebody who they don't really get along with, you know, that was kind of the moment where personal relationships had to be yeah. playfully worked out in a fictional context. And again, this seems like something at the heart of LARP in this larger context of, you know, cataclysmic climate change events.
You know, and something kind of cool, like worth thinking about comparing the structure of Destination Wedding to Thermophiles in Love was having pre-written characters for Destination Wedding. It was more of a casting process, even if it was kind of randomized, you know, whereas Thermophiles in Love, you got your gender and then you built this character kind of through interactions with the other players. So you're almost like co-creating this set of 5 genders through play over the course of each iteration of the game. You know, in the in-person game, the LARP would last for about 1.5 hours, and then the NetProv was, you know, about 3 weeks of online activities. And, you know, so you'd have different characters and, you know, different ways of constructing these 5 genders emerging in each, you know, each iteration. Whereas, you know, it's interesting is with Destination Wedding, you know, there were kind of these, there was kind of a casting process, and some players, I think, find that a little easier. There's less, putting people on the spot to, you know, improv the structure. When that happens, you sort of liberate them to just be like, okay, I've got my character, so I can instead like imagine my way into this character based on someone I know. And so I feel like it's a little easier actually.
A little more familiarity. Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I want to make sure we talk about is when we did the in-person LARPing, again, I'm thinking about the way all of, like, the other thing I really like about this group of 4 who's gathered here is, like, a lot of integrating of, like, all life experience and into the various projects. So, Haley, I remember when we were doing the in-person LARP that you brought a hand symbol that you had picked up from your work with other social change groups that meant, I don't feel safe anymore. Or I don't feel safe currently. And it was something that you were teaching the people who were playing with us so that they could quickly signal to other people, hey, we need to pause this. We need to back off. We need some safety here. Do you think during the show you can talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, totally. And I guess I should clarify that I wish social change groups used those hand signals. I think it would be very radical. But those are actually hand signals that come from the LARP community.
Oh, okay.
Oh, the
Nordic LARP community, where a lot of really good consent work has been done to allow people to sort of moderate. But yeah, that's a really good point. I was forgetting that, yeah, we totally were using Nordic LARP consent mechanics
That's great. And it was, you know, one of my favorite things too is in the live version was the dances that each gender had you signaled your gender by the dance, by the motions. And I just thought that was, and I love that sense of kind of being able to contribute just to society, you know, even outside of games, contribute to society some really useful social gestures for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right,
now,
right.
Now, Dargan, before we have to go and start recording.
I'm looking at the clock.
Do you think we could hear, I hate to put you on the spot, but can you sing us a little bit of one of your Clarence
Yeah.
songs?
Yeah, sure, totally. sure. Yeah.
Do you need to get your guitar?
I will actually have to grab the guitar, but.
Okay. Okay. Well, yeah. Here, go yeah. grab it and we'll,
cool. we can
figure out a way to bide our time while we're waiting.
Awesome.
I'm remembering the dance that Rob came up with for the oblique thermophile. It was like stroking your own hair, and there was like a specific way to do it.
Oh yeah, they all had little dances. Do you remember that, Rob?
that's what I was remembering, but I can't place them. Yeah, that I forgot about that one. Do you remember any of the others, Haley?
Yeah. I run the LARP about 5 times now. So I think what was a meso was kind of a squiggly motion.
An S-curve, the hand with an S-curve in front of the face. Yeah.
Yeah, I had to change hobblies. I turned it into a sort of foot wiggle.
Okay.
Where you're like looking down because hobblies were the shy one. Oh, here's the guitar.
Okay. All right. So, and we'll make sure, don't worry, Dargan, when we do it in the show, we'll have like, we'll get you all mic'd up and, you know, cool. we'll do an auto tuning.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Guitar's all wet.
Yeah.
Sorry
about that. But Tony, can you get a towel for Dargan for the guitar? Yeah. Thanks.
All right. So, I'll do a song called Science Rules. And it's about how, science rules, right? Of course, right? But also, science has rules, right? Just like a game has rules, right? That's why I think, some of these game type, ways of communicating are so effective, right? Because you know that there are rules of what you can do and what you can't do, right?
I love it.
Yeah, and it's sort of perfect. Sets that somehow, what kind of behavior is allowed and what isn't, It allows people, I think, to be ultimately more creative when those rules are there, right?
And absolutely.
So here goes.
That.
Rules. We cite our sources so you can look them up, follow safety procedures so our lab doesn't blow up. Carefully we take our data, even sick upon the sea. We stick to the experiment for reproducibility. Sometimes science tells you things that you just don't want to hear, but that's no excuse to hide your head in the sand in fear. Gotta listen to the evidence, let our scientists compete, get more to participate and take it to the streets, cause science rules. Science rules. Let's get the whole world to play by science rules. It's like herding cats to get researchers to agree, so those consensus statements are not hyperbole. And to those of you distorters who say it isn't true, when you make up your own facts, we'll make some noise to remind you that science rules. Science rules. Let's get the whole world to play by science rules.
I love it.
That's awesome.
All right, we'll definitely have to do that on the show, because that'll be our first tiny little concert.
That reminds
that's
me.
That's fantastic.
And maybe on the show, I would love to hear Dargan talk more about the CMIP, which was something I didn't understand or know about until we met. And it's like the Oscars of climate science. It's like a really big deal if you're a climate scientist. And I was just like mind blown, because it was like getting into CMIP season when we met. So he was just like, checking his device, being like, oh my God, awesome, new data just dropped, and like watching this like feed, and I'm like, what is going on? And it's like, this is the biggest data dump ever, because it's CMIP season, and
it's kind of crazy. Like it's CMIP means coupled model intercomparison project.
Okay.
Right. And it's only about sailing every seven over my head. Years.
Yeah, right.
Every
right.
7 years that they come out with new model data.
Oh, wow.
For the next big international climate report, right?
Wow.
Oh, okay.
But it's like a protocol, right? So
yep,
it's a way of
yep. So everybody has to run their models under the same conditions, and then they compare. And so that's what all this data for Destination Wedding was from.
It was
this brand new, hot off the presses stuff, right?
Awesome.
And the hot part is really key, because the models show more warming than in the past.
Yikes.
Yeah. So, I think just to be able to use this like brand new data and share that too with people was really fantastic.
There
have been like a few news articles about how much more warming there was on average, right?
Right, mm-hmm. right.
But again, as usual, like no communication about the day-to-day weather events. So
And
like the model that you used, that we ended up using for Destination Wedding, because you and I sat down and we looked at a bunch of different models, and we kind of gotten into an argument actually, because it was like, you were like, well, we could do this unrealistic optimistic model. A lot of people really like this one because it's optimistic and people like optimism. And I was like, yeah, but it's not accurate based on the trends going on right now, So it was like this moment of realizing, okay, we have to do, I'm trying to remember the model name. It was like SCAN5.
Yeah, CAN ESM5. Yeah.
CAN ESM5.
That's actually just a bit farther up the road from Seattle to Bellingham is Victoria, British Columbia is where that Canadian Earth System model comes from. And it's the hottest, it's the most sensitive climate model, pretty sure, that we've ever had in a CMIP.
Wow.
It just shows
that mean to be like the most
it's
sensitive.
Closer to twice as much warming than we expected.
Yikes.
Wow. Well, that was the other thing I just want to mention. The reason why it was so nice to have play involved in all this was that our current young people who are college age, like most of them were already overwhelmed with the sense of impending doom. Mm-hmm. And so while it always feels like, I'm sure that you're battling a news media that like just will not receive, because it's not a news media, it's an industrial force that does not want to accept any of the things you're saying, because it would destroy them, right? Or they're incapable of change. But for our students, like even bringing up climate change fills them with so much dread that the play allowed them to, I think, process that in maybe a
absolutely
more healthy way.
Yeah, and I think even the climate scientists' response to that whole, environment of communication is really bad usually. Mm. It's usually to scare, it's usually to show that most dire predictions and act like it's the only way that things are going to happen. Mm. When in fact, there's a lot of things that we can do. If we got on the ball about climate solutions, we could build a much more resilient society.
Wow.
Through a lot of different kinds of actions, both cutting fossil fuel use and preparing for those, building more resilience in communities.
Yeah.
I think finally the climate communication community is starting to recognize that we need to envision better futures,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But I think this type of activity where you are kind of making the best of what you got, you know, on a particular really important day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wedding, yeah.
I think that's exactly the type of communication that needs to be done, because that's honestly what it's going to be more like than anything.
Yeah.
It's going to be like people improvising solutions and doing the best that they can, you know, given unexpected things that come up, right?
Exactly. Like one of the versions that I played, everybody kind of switched to canoes and kayaks, and they were there in the special building, but they were about, you know, 6 feet off the floor and kind of making them. And grandma was there in her kayak, and everybody was telling their stories and trying, trying to make the best of it. Well, it's like the term that Mark came up with for it is sort of, in addition to data visualization, there's the practice of data visualization, but data dramatization is like kind of, and I really like that as a portable concept for use in this subject matter and other ones too.
Well, here's the future dramatizations.
How would we define data dramatization, you know, as a term? Is there like, I feel like there was a parameter for it, like you know, maybe the fact that we used you know, real, you know, CAN ESM5 data, you know, and that we kept the data centered, you know, the players got to interact directly with the data, and the idea was that the data itself was a type of improv prompt rather than us like pre-packaging a narrative
exactly.
where we're saying it's just hotter. It's like, no, we're giving you specific sets of data as your prompt.
And I mean, I think there are two parts of it. That, you know, there's an interpretation that's happening on a human level, right? And then there's a narrativizing of that, are kind of what turns the brings the dramatization. Like, it's not that the data is not dramatic to begin with. It's that it hasn't been narrativized, and it hasn't been, again, processed by that whole human being with their whole lived experience of weather, and then imagine it, like that powerful process of imagining that into the future with others. I guess that's what strikes me is.
And I mean, it builds on things that people have been doing in games, like Sims games, or, you know.
World Without Oil. You know, if you ever heard of that one, one of the really early ARGs.
Yeah, World Without Oil. That's the simplest rule set ever. It's like oil supply stops completely now.
Yep.
Depending on what field you're in, what happens? Yeah. What happens this week? What happens the next week? Yeah. And it's like, you know, educational simulations people have been doing for a long time. But the thing that I hope that we bring to it from NetProv is, you know, make the novelistic part where we really care about the characters and the story along. It's like, if those things are working, then you've got this really kind of amazing form where it's the data thought and this really fun improvising and really memorable characters.
And play.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So needed in climate communication right now, you know? Yeah. To be able to like envision realistic but better futures that we can prepare for and that we can make it better, you know.
Well, that's there's a thing that I just love that was an article with an interview that Politico did with a bunch of different people in different fields, and their premise just is there's no going back to normal. Those things are not going to get back to normal. Can we make things better? And like for my fall teaching, that's all my classes. That's going to be the theme of all the classes. Because just exactly what you're saying. It can't just be something so overwhelming that it stops you in your tracks. We have to find a way of staying flexible, staying relaxed, and making, you know, being creative. Creative engagement is what we need.
And I feel like something I really love about Dargan's institution, you know, is that there are these approaches that are really outside the box within atmospheric science itself. You know, like to my knowledge, Earth Games is the only games lab that's situated within an atmospheric science department, which is just so cool. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, you're not separating those things out, you know, like
right.
with, the Mod Lab, you know, which is a humanities game design lab that I'm a project director for at UC Davis, you know, we find ourselves sort of, you know, having to bring scientists in, and there's this sense of like, you know, it's a totally different, you know, ball game when the scientists are the game makers. And so it's like, you've got that facet of grappling with and communicating climate data as game makers happening at UW. But then you also have folks like, I believe Dr. Atkinson is there, who's doing a lot of work on climate grief.
Yeah, and Jennifer Atkinson.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's also another way to not dissociate, to not abstract away from the problem, or to not come down with the hard fear thing. And so she holds space, I guess, for people to like on a Friday night, she'll hold these like meetings in Seattle, almost like an AA meeting or something, where people like grieve the climate together while she.
Wow, that is so interesting. You know,
I feel like that all brings it full circle then, Haley, to your work, you know, going out to the Capitol Hill organized protest, and then like your understanding of your deep understanding of LARP and of performance goes hand in hand with your investigations, your deep human investigations and connection to social issues and social organizations that are performing communal responses to things. Like, again, like that's, you don't put a wall up between those two parts of your own interventions, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I also, I feel like that's harmonious with what Dargan is doing.
Totally. That's a really interesting, way to sort of connect it and bring things full circle, you know, because like in making games and doing game development of the type that I do, you know, there isn't a clear separation between holding space to grieve and to process what psychologists sometimes call negative emotions. You know, and especially in the serious LARP community, there are folks who, for example, do bunker LARPs, in which, you know, you LARP for hours or days. I believe there was a giant bunker LARP in Rome recently, where you have a LARP in which you're play acting that a nuclear bomb has gone off, that mutual assured destruction has happened, that you're some of the last survivors hiding in a basement until the radiation kills everyone in that basement. And this is a game. This is a game that consenting adults play, that they fly across the world to have that experience.
Wow.
And there are just a number of these very serious LARPs that, you know, have been, you know, developed and mounted over the years. And something I really value about being introduced to that community at first through LARPing conventions, you know, I show up with a background in Tolkien-esque LARP, just being like, oh boy, elves, this is going to be, you know, a bunch of nerdy people. And I meet these like very serious European LARPers, and they're just like, I just LARPed the Holocaust.
Whoa.
You
know,
wow.
You're just like, what? You know, what were you doing last week? Wait, huh? Wow. You know, it's sort of, you know, and I certainly have criticisms about some of the things where they've LARPed. And I feel like there's a very nuanced conversation that needs to be had about, you know, when is it appropriate to LARP an event and when it isn't, and how to work with communities who've experienced harm. You know, if you want to LARP, you know, LARP some traumatic event, you know, that happened to a community. But, you know, that said, you know, there's this whole community that is built around holding space to sort of through play process these cultural traumas. So I guess approaching, you know, LARP, approaching autonomous zones. I've run LARPs with, you know, survivors of the People's Park massacre, with people who, you know, in the Berkeley, San Francisco area, who are still grappling with some of the trauma of what occurred when, you know, Reagan was governor and sent the army to occupy the city and, you know, shoot a bunch of people, and, you know, shot up the high school, or not the army, excuse me, the Alameda Sheriff's Department under Reagan's orders, you know, but they're like these cultural traumatic events that have, you know, trauma that lingers decades later when you don't hold that space for narrative, you know, narrative co-creation, to start building language together around what happened. You know, and I see like this sort of future that, you know, the climate, the relationship that people have with climate right now, being in this place that, that is somewhat similar to, you know, traumas of the past, mm-hmm. where you have denial and ways of sort of fortifying yourself psychologically against it, and sometimes just holding space for play and vulnerability is how to, you know, access that space so you can begin the healing process. You know, can't change until you heal, you know.
Yeah holding space for play and vulnerability, that's it. Love it.
That's super cool. Awesome. Well, I'm getting the signal from Tony. I think we better start rolling on the real one. Okay. This is fantastic. If you like, I've got notes, and we'll cycle back through all of this really cool stuff. So, Princeton Marine Motor Repair.
Yeah, okay. You got to get
I think
that.
We
name
got
to
it. Look at that boat in there.
Your brother Haley, he could use the boat repair.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little far away. I'm sure you take a couple llamas, you can get to Washington area pretty quickly.
Hold it. Before we actually really start, would it be okay to take like a 2-minute bio stretch break? I'm just kind
absolutely.
Of...
Yeah, I have to.
Good idea.
Okay.
I gotta get more coffee.
We'll do this. Okay, yeah, get more coffee.
No worries. Great idea.